Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to yet another special bonus edition of the Paul Ryder Tapes. This interview was recorded a few months ago when our subject came to visit LA with his kids. I've just played it back and it had me laughing hysterically and then ending up in floods of tears. Oh, this one is a real roller coaster. It's a good friend of Paul's. It's the actor who played the part of Paul Ryder in the film 24 Hour Party People. All the way from Hull, it's the theatrical thespian, the Shakespearean sire, the dramatic duke, that is, the lovely Paul Popplewell, or as Paul Ryder liked to call him, Paul Popple Crazy.
Am I eyeline a bit wide there, though?
I'm going to sit right next to the camera.
You can tell I'm an actor, can't you?
Yeah.
So my name's Paul Popplewell, and I'm an actor, and I'm in my mid-40s now. But when I was in my early 20s, I landed a dream role of playing Paul Ryder in the film 24 Hour Party People. And having been a Mundus fan, it was a dream job. I met Michael Winterbottom in a warehouse in Ancoats.
What, randomly, or you'd been called to a meeting
film
with him? What, your agent called
you? Yeah,
my
agent had got, my agent had got me an audition. So I'd got the script, right, and it was mainly about Tony Wilson on it. I didn't know who Tony Wilson was at the time, because when I was into the band, I was only young. You know what I mean? I was the age my kids are now, which is quite young.
Yeah.
So I wasn't into Factory Records and the whole kind of going to the Hacienda. Mm-hmm. I was like a tween or a teen, you know what I mean? That bit younger. And having not grown up in the Northwest, Tony Wilson wasn't on my television when I was growing up. But the fact that it was about the music and the bands who I knew, that was the bit that really grabbed me. And it was something I was really up for being involved with. And then I met Michael, who I'd worked with before. And I wasn't very focused as a young actor. I wasn't overly ambitious. I was a daydreamer. So I'm not really applying it. Do you know what I mean? I was like doing it all in my head, but actually putting the groundwork in. So I don't know that I was very focused when I went for the meeting either. Mm. I was clearing off to Egypt for 6 weeks. And I turned up at the meeting with my rucksack. So I'd picked my rucksack up from Yorkshire and I was going off to London to get a plane to Egypt. So I wasn't really that focused for it. And I never really thought much about it again.
Yeah.
And I didn't think I would get it, the job, even though I wanted it. But I met him and we chatted. We didn't read.
No.
I've never read for Michael ever. I've never auditioned for Michael ever. We just chatted. Just had a chat about probably the music, probably. slightly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Really general, informal conversation. And then I cleared off to Egypt. I wasn't going to come back. I said to my mum, I'm going to stay here. Like, there's nothing to come back for. I was just going to be a backpacking bum. And she was like, no, you've got to come back. But she wouldn't tell me why. And my agent had told my mum, like, we want to tell him. So don't tell him, but you've got to get him back.
Why couldn't they call you in Egypt to tell you?
I don't know. We didn't have mobiles, did I? Didn't have a mobile phone. I was living in, like, backpacking, like, huts and all sorts in Dahab at the time, towards the end. And then I landed and I rang my mum and she said, ring your agent now. And I rang my agent. I said, you've got the role. And I was buzzing. It was like, I thought I'd made it. Genuinely, I thought, my life's going to change and, like, living a dream. And it was a dream. I mean, like, still in touch with so many people from that job. I've never been part of a job like it.
How did you first get to know Paul?
I first met Paul at his house. Right. You were there.
I was, yeah. Tell me about that.
Okay, so there was me, Rowetta. Again, I spoke about this at the funeral, didn't I? Me and Danny, who played Paul and Sean, hit it off like that.
Yeah.
As did the rest of the Mondays with all of us. In fact, the first day we ever met in the rehearsal room in Ancoats, we were supposed to be having a band rehearsal and we just worked our way through a few crates of Red Stripe, I think, or Stella or something like that. And it became like a running joke that it was like methadone acting. Not that anybody took methadone, but you know what I mean? It was like a tongue-in-cheek thing because we were partying. And Rowetta took us under her wing big time, me and Danny particularly, because she already knew Nikki and Chris, who played Bez, and Gaz. They were mates anyway. And she said, I'm going to get you to meet Paul. And I think it was quite early on. I'm not even sure whether we'd started filming, because I think we had a week's rehearsal period. Not that we really did much. My timeline could be a bit out here, but we went to your house in Worsley, didn't we?
Yeah.
And me and Danny were worse for wear.
Yeah.
Which has always bothered me, really, knowing what I know about Paul now. But, it was a world I didn't know about, like that he didn't drink at the time. And we turned up pretty much out of it. I think we'd been in the dry bar all day and Rowetta picked us up and said, he'll see you later. And we, I think we even brought beers into your house and we sat there drinking them. But it was a massive thing for us because we were fans of the band. And also we were taking it quite seriously about wanting to do everybody justice and not be caricatures and, you know, get it right. To the point where I came out saying to Danny, I know I need to tone it down. He's quite quiet and he's quite shy and, like, you know, he's not brash and loud. And to the point where sometimes on set I would be doing less. And in between takes I'd be pissing about and fooling about. I remember putting one of the lads' face in a pie one day or something in between a take. And Michael said, do that on camera. But when the camera was rolling, I would tone it down a bit because that may be a bit more Paul.
A lot of the scenes in the film that had a feel of being quite authentic and improvised. Is that true?
It was all pretty much improvised. I mean, Frank Cottrell Boyce wrote a brilliant script.
Yeah.
But it was pretty much a base starting point. I think we shot, for a 90-minute, two-hour film, I think we shot over 200 hours of footage.
Wow.
I could be wrong there. I know it was a silly amount and it was multi-camera. There was a lot of cameras, I seem to remember. Oh, wow. It was handheld a lot of the time, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to remember, we were partying hard, so it's a bit hazy for us. we were sort of living it, really.
Yeah. Was it like a conscious decision to kind of be method actors in that
sense? No, I don't think so. I think we were just... We all got swept up in it. It was quite a party vibe on that film, as you probably know.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just the cast. I think it was the crew. It was everybody. It was a movement in itself, that film. Yeah. It was sort of, what's the saying? Like, life imitating art? Or is it the other way around? Yeah. You know what I mean? It was...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it took a long time for a lot of people to get over that, I think. So I hit it off with Paul, or I thought I did. on set, because Paul would come down to set, wouldn't he? I mean, I don't know whether you remember, you're probably working and stuff, but he'd come down to set with his pal, Rob. I was really quite taken with him. Bit of a fanboy, I suppose. But then not, because he was really just easy to get along with and very human, and I liked his energy, and he was really kind. Do you know what I mean? I nearly went then. He was just really kind and really generous.
Yeah.
And obviously I was playing him, so I was like wanting to be around him, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And hang out with him and get to know him and talk to him. And he was keen, like he'd give me a watch to wear. Do you know what I mean? I remember that. I said, wear that watch. It probably says something about him. Like, it was a nice watch. I think it was an Amiga. He said, wear that. I used to wear that. And he was just really enthusiastic. And I guess we just hit it off, became friends. And I liked his... I mean, I don't know what he was like on the inside back then, and obviously I was worse for wear most of the time, but he seemed quite calm, and like my life was chaotic. I don't know what his was like on the outside, but it just like I liked his energy, and I guess we just got to know each other as friends. Time rolled on, didn't it? And then a year later, I'm back in Manchester doing a play at the Royal Exchange. And I don't know whether it was him or you who asked, like, invited me to stay, or whether I invited myself. I honestly can't remember. But I really enjoyed living there and, like, spending more time with you.
Yeah.
And, like, just hanging out. And he was making his album, his Big Arm album at the time.
Okay.
And we started rehearsing for the premiere, didn't we? The film company or somebody paid for the lads who played the Appamundas to have 2 weeks, maybe a week or two in a studio in Manchester, like a couple of hours a day to rehearse, to do 5 or 6 songs at the premiere at the Astoria on Charing Cross Road.
Oh, I thought it was to play in Cannes.
They were back to back. I'll tell you when it was.
There was a Manchester one as well.
My head's coming together now with it. I'll tell you when it was. I was rehearsing the play. And while we were rehearsing, we had the world premiere in London, because I got released from rehearsals to go to London. That was sort of part of the thing when I was negotiating the play, that would be happening.
Yeah.
And could I go and do the premiere in London?
Yeah.
So we had the time in the studio, probably for both, actually. Both gigs was probably why they did it. So we did the world premiere at the Astoria, and we played, I think, 6 songs, and I did 3 and Paul did 3. He did Kinky Afro. Can't remember what else he did, but I did Rope for Luck, 24-Hour Party People, and Hallelujah.
Did you play the bass before you did that role?
Never, no.
And how was it to learn all those songs?
I loved it. I was finding it hard. And then one day it just clicked in the studio, particularly Rope for Luck.
Right.
And Paul went, that's it, you've got it.
Was he coaching you in how to play the songs?
Well, yes and no. I'll tell you who was really good, Dan Hope, who played Mark Day.
Oh, okay.
He was a brilliant musician, and he kind of became our MD in rehearsals.
Right.
And he was sort of helping us all put it together. But obviously everybody else was a musician anyway.
Yeah.
Right? And Danny could sing and Ro could sing. It was just me. Paul was asleep a lot during the rehearsals in the next studio.
Makes sense, yeah.
So we did the 6 songs at the Astoria, and then a few weeks later, when my play, well, not my play, but the play I was doing, which was American Buffalo at the Exchange, opened, you all went to Cannes, and it was the play's last weekend.
Right.
And the red carpet was on the Saturday night, which was my last performance. So I flew out on the Sunday morning.
Right.
And, you know.
So you missed the party,
I missed
everything.
It all. I missed the red carpet, I missed the Cannes premiere, I missed the gig. Didn't you get the plug pulled? I think the sound, it was really bad or something. Something happened.
I don't remember.
And I arrived at the villa when people were sort of getting ready to go to bed.
So it was just like there was nothing to do in Cannes other than just have a party with everybody in the villa.
Yeah, and I really ought not to have gone, because I was supposed to start filming something else on the Monday. But I said, oh, I've got to go to Cannes for a premiere. But and we missed our flight.
Oh, wow.
We missed our flight.
Who? Who's we?
All of us. All the lads playing the Mondays.
Bit of method acting again.
we missed our flight. We got to Nice Airport and they said, you've missed the last flight to Manchester. And I was like, My car's in Manchester Airport, in the car park. And they said, but don't worry, we can get you on a flight to London. And I went, actually, that's better for me, because I'm supposed to be filming in London tomorrow. I don't know how all the rest of the lads got to Manchester, but I remember saying to Nicky Clark, who played Gaz, I was like, you couldn't go to Manchester Airport because you didn't get my car out, do you?
Did he?
Car. He did, yeah, what a legend. So I was living at yours and spending a lot of time with Paul during the day when I wasn't rehearsing, I think. I mean, it was such a long time ago. And then we had mutual friends in Yorkshire. He became friends with one of my friends, didn't he? And so I would see him then, and then we came to your house. So the friendship just progressed, really. And then he moved out to America, and I would see him less and speak to him less after that. But always in touch, you know. And when he was in Britain, I was always threatening to go to gigs.
Did you ever see the Mondays play live after that?
Yeah, I saw them when they reformed the original lineup.
How did you feel when you found out they were reforming with the original lineup?
I don't know really what I should say and what I shouldn't say, but there's always that wonder of how would everybody get on. You know, I don't know. I only know Rowetta and Paul, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I know there was always tension, and I know that's one of the reasons they split up in the first place.
Yeah.
So it's always that wonder of, will they all get on? Will it be a success?
Yeah. What were your hopes as Paul's friend? What were your hopes for him? Did you hope that he would get back in the Mondays?
I guess so. I mean, what you hope for your friends is that they're going to be, I won't say happy, because that's a childlike statement when people say I want to be happy, because it's an emotion and it passes. What am I trying to say? That he would be comfortable and content and in a good place.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like in a good place, a safe space. Not to sound hippie-ish, but do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Did you feel like it was always something that he wanted to do that he hadn't quite finished?
I felt that. Yeah, I guess that when I was living with you, and this is only my perception, right?
Yeah.
And my perception might not be right, but my perception, and maybe with more hindsight, is that there was unfinished business, that there was a sense of injustice, and that was his band as much as anybody's band.
Yeah.
And he had every right to be there. And it was maybe politics or dynamics that was stopping him doing what he was born to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that maybe when they got back together, that he would be in a good place. Because he was super fucking talented, right?
Yeah.
Like, brilliantly, I nearly said lazily. I don't mean it lazily. Casually. That's the better way of putting it. He played with such casual ease that it was like, you know, and I tried to play bass and it wasn't easy.
So did you then become concerned that he might struggle being back in the band? Or
were
you pleased for him?
Yeah, I mean, I know Paul's history and it's not for me to talk about that on camera, and I'm sure he's talked about that himself, obviously. But yeah, of course, like, you want someone to be safe, and is that a good environment for you to be in? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Are you going to be okay?
Yeah.
Are you in a good enough place to be able to say when you're not okay, or to take yourself out of an environment, you know? But seemingly he was, and he did, and I think they was travelling separately as far as I understand it, and you know, and with Gaz, and I think, did he travel with Gaz and Mark?
All the bands together, and then Sean on his own.
Yeah. So, you know, but I saw him at the MEN, as it's not called anymore, but I still call it that. I saw him there, and I saw you and him afterwards. And then I took my dad to a couple, I think.
Yeah.
I think we went to see him at the O2 or the Town and Country in Leeds. Sean was doing a lot of talking about the band and saying nice things about Paul on stage. And I said to Paul afterwards, you seem to be getting on well. It's just good actors. That might have been at Chico's gig, actually. I can't remember.
Let's talk a bit about that, actually, because you were kind of very supportive of us all when Chico was ill.
I mean, it's your worst nightmare, isn't it, as a parent?
Yeah.
You tell me. You lived it. But It's that thing when things are, horrible things are happening to people you love and care about, because you and Paul will always have a special place in my heart, always, because you were so kind to me when my life was turbulent. Do you know what I mean? And when I was younger, in my early 20s, and that was the thing about Paul as well, it was like he was a role model to me in my early days when I was living with you. But yeah, what do you want to talk about Chico and illness?
Just how that affected you, because you went out of your way. I remember you doing a marathon. You did a fundraising race for Chico.
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Did I run a race? I wasn't even a runner then either. I remember working with Daniel Radcliffe and asking him. I didn't know whether Chico was a fan of Harry Potter, but I know. I remember you saying after the fact.
Yeah.
But I just thought, what 10-year-old boy
wouldn't
or at least know about it?
Yeah.
Or at least put a smile. I just, it's that thing when you're so far away from people and you just think that you're powerless, aren't you? There's nothing you can do.
No.
There's nothing really you can do as a mum. You can do very little, can you? Yeah. Other than love them and support them.
Yeah.
And as a friend thousands of miles away, you can do even less. And it's just that thing of what, even if you can just put a smile on the face or something. Yeah. So, I asked him.
What did he say?
He said, yeah, and I asked him if he'd heard of the band, and he was like, of course I have, and he knew the band, and he liked the band. And I explained, well, you know, Paul's lad's got cancer, and, you know, is there anything he's got with him? We were on set that I could send out there. And he said he had some photos, and then his PA was there, and he said, speak to the PA. And I thought, no, I'm not having that. I'm speaking to you. Like, I need this to happen. And then towards the end of the day, he was like, yeah, you just give whatever his PA's name was, a nice guy, but give him your details and we'll get the photo to you. And I was like, I need this today, because I know, like, if this will never happen, do you know what I mean? Through all the goodwill in the world, trying to pin somebody down at another time for something. And if they're in your car, well, I can get in this now. his guy went and got it out of his boat, and he signed it for Chico, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk a bit about his sense of humour and the famous names for people. Do you know much about names that he used to give people?
I didn't know this until the funeral.
You were Paul Popple crazy.
Which made me laugh. Who read that out? Was it Amelia who read it out?
It was Amelia had written it, but Victor.
Victor read it out. Yeah. Me and Victor have been in touch since the funeral.
Have you?
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Victor read it out, and he read Amelia's letter to her dad, which was beautiful. How she put that together is.
Yeah.
It was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
I can't remember what she said, but I remember being really moved by it. And when Victor said, he went through the list of names, didn't he?
Yeah.
And there was one for Ian Brown, and there was Paul Popple crazy for me, which made me laugh. Coming from one of the Happy Mondays. But I think I was crazy when he met me, for sure, and particularly when I was living... How you two put up with me when I was living at your house. I was so erratic and off it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I always wanted to come and see you in America.
Yeah.
This has been quite a strange trip in some respects. Even though I'm on holiday with my kids, it's like I'm at your house.
Yeah.
And it's a trip I always thought I'd do and come and see you both years ago and never did. And then it's one of the reasons I've done this trip, not because of Paul, but like with my kids, you always think that life's just too short, isn't it?
Yeah.
With Paul going last year and my uncle going and some certain family members not so well, you just think, you can't always wait, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For the right time or ifs and whens. And so we're here now anyway. I got here eventually to see you.
Yeah. Have you got any other funny memory, any other anecdotes or just little funny stories you can think of?
I always thought it was funny. Dry sense of humour and quick. I don't know. I liked his warmth and his generosity.
What is his legacy, what do you think? Like, what's...
I don't know. It's not for me to say what his legacy is. I think his legacy is really, for me, would be how much love he's left with his family. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, he probably cares, knowing Paul, what his musical legacy is. Because... Look at his kids, you know, lovely kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's what's important. I don't think it's for me to say what his legacy is. I think the music will live on. I mean, yeah. He was a brilliant musician. I remember saying to Ro when the paparazzi were at the church, was it the paparazzi? Yeah, there was some paparazzi there. Knowing how private I am, I was like, look at them, fucking hell, I can't help themselves or something. And Ro went, you're talking about, you love that. This was outside the church, and she was like, he'd love it.
It's funny because Jake...
He'd be gutted if they weren't there, sort of thing. Whereas I'm the opposite. I'd be like, weirdly private.
I think we did him proud, I really do. Like,
yeah, I think it was lovely.
Like, having Ian McCulloch singing.
I know, I was telling my kids that today, and they don't really know who he is. But
yeah.
I started playing the song in the restaurant in Santa Monica Beach this morning, and my lad was like, turn it down.
Can you listen to that without crying?
Do you know, I listened to that for 90 minutes on loop, leaving the wake. 90 minutes.
Did you?
Yeah. That's something else that me and Ian talked about at the funeral, at the wake.
Yeah.
When we were just saying, well done on your words. And us both saying how nervous we were. We talked about Rowetta.
Yeah.
And how on earth she did that.
I know. Like, she said, I'm not doing him again. That's my last funeral. I'm not doing him. It's too hard.
She's done Derek's, hasn't she?
Yeah.
I mean,
she's amazing. I love Rowetta.
She was a row in front of me.
She was a row in front of you.
Yeah,
literally.
very good. I didn't even pick up on that. So she was on the. I was sat on the front row with her, and then Bez came in with the coffin. So I moved back one and let Bez sit with Row. So I'm behind her. Ian's behind me. So I'm like one row away from her. Excuse the pun again. And Ian's two rows, and that's what we were basically saying. Like. To hear the power of her amazing, beautiful voice so close, to see the emotion in her eyes and her face.
Yeah.
I was pretty much broken. I don't want to speak for Ian, but it was emotive, to say the least.
Yeah.
How she kept that together, I have no idea.
I know.
It was amazing.
How did you keep it together for your speech?
I was nervous for weeks. Days. Like, I wrote it and I rewrote it, and it was trying to do Paul justice and trying to do the family justice. Not justice, that's the wrong word, but like, this is what your dad meant to me.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what that funeral did do. I'm going off on a tangent here. It made me think about what I want for mine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you know what you want?
I want something like that. Just like that. I said to my kids recently, I said that that's how I'd want it. Like, and I texted my brother only a couple of weeks ago, and I texted my mate Mark in London and said, look, I haven't got a will together yet, but I do need to get one, but I want you to know I'd like you to talk, and I want you to talk, and I don't want someone I don't know. I thought it was beautiful, the way different people from different parts of his life spoke about, this is how I know Paul, and this is what he meant to me.
Yeah.
And this is how, and you had like his old mate from the post office.
Yeah.
and Ian Brown, who he's played with and was his friend for decades, and me, who played him in a film, and Alan was his manager.
Yeah. One other thing. Okay. And he talks about this.
Let me
tell... You know what's coming, don't you, so to speak?
Yeah. Oh, I know what you're getting at. Yeah.
Go on.
Okay, just to fill you in on what we're actually talking about here, you may remember from the main series, Paul talking about the fact that he was extremely pleased when he was watching the film. There was a scene in the tour bus where Paul Popplewell did a full frontal. Paul Ryder was extremely pleased to see that he was, rather generously endowed.
No, you say.
Well, how you said it at the funeral was brilliant, actually.
Oh, did I mention it?
You said it, but you said, I can't tell you what it is, but if anyone wants to come up to me and ask
nobody
me,
did.
No one did.
Nobody did. I thought, how can I talk about penises in a church at a funeral in front of his mother who's grieving? It just wasn't appropriate, was it? But I think I mentioned it only because you'd mentioned it.
I told you that he'd mentioned it in his...
Actually, no. No? No, I'd written it anyway. I can't say this without blushing.
You can.
I regret doing it, is the truth.
Why?
Doing a full frontal.
Why?
Well, come on, it wasn't necessary. And I've got kids now. I'd love to show my kids that film. But how do you show your kids a film that you get your... bits out in.
You didn't do anything bad with it though, did you? You didn't use it as a lethal weapon.
No, but Roetta used the whip as a lethal weapon and smacked my ass in the same scene.
Your kids would appreciate the art, the artist. Just tell them the director made you do
they're
it.
They're a bit young, yeah. Yeah, I know Paul was pleased about that. But I'm not going to say that, so you better just come out with it if you want to say.
Well, I can just cut it into him talking.
Do that.
That's what I'll do. That.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, you're glad that you gave him a good reputation in that department.
Well, I don't know what he holds himself, but you know, or held himself, so to speak. Again, excuse the pun. But I think maybe that's what bonded us. Maybe I liked the affiliation of been friends with an Happy Monday, and he liked, you know, been friends with someone so well hung. Don't put that in. Don't put that in. Oh, dear. Look at me. Don't put that in.
Can I put it in?
No.
That would be really funny.
I don't know how I kept it together at the funeral. I suppose like anybody else, you just...
Do you have to, like, detach?
Yeah, I think I just detached.
Yeah.
Just knew that it was like, get the job done. It's like, stay in the zone.
Yeah.
Totally detach. And I remember losing it halfway through or at some point through it.
Yeah.
And having to pause and stop. And I took a massive breath because I was about to just lose it. But I'd written it a couple of times and each time it had been very similar.
Yeah.
So I obviously had it in my head.
Yeah.
So I didn't look at it much on the
day. Is there anything that you said in that speech that we've not talked about?
I don't know. If I've got my phone, I could tell you. I mean, you could have the speech. I did wonder that. I thought, would the kids ever want that? Maybe not. Maybe it's just
for them. Why don't you read
the
speech and then we've got it?
Read it?
Yeah, just read it now if you've got it on your phone.
Well, I probably emailed myself it, you see. I grew up as a teenage Happy Mondays fan. I had my Adidas trainers, baggy haircut. I had Pills Thrills bummed on cassette. I played them in bedroom. I even did my own pencil drawing of the bummed album cover. Blue tacked it to my bedroom wall like a poster. By the time I was 16, I'd left school and sacked off college and was working as a professional actor. Fast forward a few years and I landed a dream role playing Paul Ryder of the Happy Mondays in the film called 24 Hour Party People about Tony Wilson and Factory Records. That's how I met Paul. That's how we became friends. It was an amazing job with brilliant people. All the lads who played the Mondays got on well, and Rowetta, who played herself, embraced us all, embraced the film with the same enthusiasm and excitement as we did. We partied hard. In fact, the first day we all met, the film's production offices was supposed to be a band rehearsal, but it quickly turned into an all-day and then all-night drinking session in my hotel room. Rowetta took us under her wing quite early on. She arranged for me and Danny, who played Sean, to meet Paul at his house in Worsley, which we spoke about when you were there. Ro drove us over and Danny and I turned up in a state, having been drinking all day. Paul wasn't drinking then. He was in recovery and very serene. I remember we was nervous, i.e. me and Danny, but excited about meeting him. And I remember how welcoming Paul was. And we made us feel very at ease, regaling us with stories about himself and the band. That I liked. I remember that. I don't remember anything he talked about that night, but I remember kind of him just telling us stories. And I remember him enjoying telling us stories, like having an audience. That I remember.
Yeah.
Like in hindsight now, I think he really enjoyed that. Like having us captivated and listening. Yeah. Hanging on his every word. I mean, I don't know if that's how he felt, but yeah. My 20-odd-year-old memory sort of thinks that. Regaling us with stories about the band, but also shows an interest in us and an interest in the film. From that meeting, Paul took more and more interest in the film and he'd come down to set, as we spoke about. In fact, he was offered a role in the film himself and he was brilliant. He was good in it, wasn't he? Yeah. He was really good in it. I got to know him more and more and we struck up a friendship. I learnt a few bass lines for the film and we played live in the film. So at the end of the film, and we did a gig at a rap party, the lads who played the Mondays and Ro on vocals and Paul and I sharing bass duties. Then we got asked to do another gig at the film's world premiere. I was terrified before we went on, pretty much panic attacking in the dressing room. There you go, that's written down. About to play in front of the media, people from the film industry and rock and roll royalty. Paul was super chilled and laid back. I wonder in hindsight, was he?
Yeah, probably wasn't. But compared to you, maybe.
He seemed it, do you know what I mean? And as I say, he was saying, chill out, you'll be fine. And I think what he was probably saying is, fucking shut up, you're making me anxious. He let me borrow his bass and on we went. We shared bass duties. Paul played masterly, as he did, and I played badly, but with tons of enthusiasm, memories I'll cherish forever. I do cherish those memories. Yeah. A mate of mine was a musician, and I remember telling him, and he was like a proper musician, trying to get signed. He might even been signed. But he was like, you've done one gig, maybe two if you include your rap pie, and you've played the Astoria. He said, it took me years before we played the Astoria. The following year, I was up in the Royal Exchange, Manchester, doing a play, and Paul and Angela invited me to live with them. As I say, or I invited myself, I can't remember. I was trying to get my, what was he say? Paul was a real example with his kind of chilled out vibe. Him and Angela were always patient, kind and supportive to me. I love being around him and the family. In fact, before I checked into my hotel last night, I went and sat in the car outside the old house in Worsley Green for a few moments. It was good times. I'll always be grateful to them, that's you and Paul. It was also about the time Paul was making the Big Arm album, so I'd often sit in the studio and hang out with him, enjoy the music being made. Years rolled on and we stayed in contact. He came to my wedding. Of course you did, didn't you? Yeah. You both came over. I saw less and less of Paul after he'd moved to California, but we stayed in contact via phones and apps. I found Paul caring and kind, supportive, non-judgmental. One of the last contacts ever with Paul was during lockdown when I was going through my divorce. Again, he was really supportive, offering hope that me and my ex would remain friends and good parenting team, telling me that him and Angela got on really well. I read it much better on the day, didn't I? I'd forgotten about this. I had it in my head since the Primal Scream and Happy Mondays dates were announced that I'd catch him in Cardiff.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was where I was working.
Right.
I checked into my hotel the night before the Mondays gig. And as I was checking in, I think there was a gig on that night, one the night before. Mm-hmm. And the guy was saying, oh, there's a gig on tonight. And I said, I know, there's one on tomorrow as well. I couldn't go. I just couldn't go. But I'd had it in my head for like 6-12 months or whatever that I was going to go to that gig, and I would catch up with Paul and you know, and then obviously the gig came around and I didn't go in the end. I thought it would be a good chance to see them playing, to catch up with Paul and Rowetta. Then a week before the gig, I was in a hotel room in London, and I got a text from my mate Paddy, who also knew Paul from 24 Hour Party People because he played Rod Gretton, and he said, "I've heard about Paul." I replied, "What about him?" But before the reply came back from him, my stomach went, and I realised what he might have meant. And I sat in silence for a bit, my girlfriend asking me what was wrong, and I was quiet, and then I just wept, devastated, heartbroken. I thought about Paul every day since. I was in a Cardiff the day of the gig, the week after his death, my hotel a couple hundred metres from the castle, but I didn't go, couldn't face it, not without him on stage. Angela, you, sent me a funny message last night about Paul, and then we ended up having a good long chat for, well, it was over an hour, I remember.
Yeah.
And she told me that she'd just recorded a podcast with Paul, this one, I guess, and that you'd only just finished it not long before he died, and that you talked about me on it. And that was really nice to hear. And I'll just say, I won't share what it was, but if anybody wants to ask me after the funeral, they can. And then I just finish it with, "I'll miss him."
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Oh, thank you.
That is all that we've got for you this week. Hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. We're playing out with the song that Paul did with Pete Smith and Rowetta, which was used for the 24 Hour Party People Films website. It's called Party People. We're going to be back again next week, same time, same place, with another bonus episode. And if you want to watch the premiere of this episode on video, it premieres next Sunday, that is April the 21st, on YouTube at 8 p.m. UK time. Please do me a favour and hit the subscribe button so that you'll be the first to hear about our new content. And please join our Patrons Club by going to patreon.com/thePaulRyderTapes. Patrons get first dibs on being in our live streams, and we've got another one coming up very soon, so don't miss out. Check out the website paulryder.tv for links to the socials and our shop. Have a really fantastic week, everybody. Big thanks to every single one of you for being here, and of course big thanks to Paul Popplewell for talking to us this week, and of course to the man himself for inspiring all of this, to the late great Paul Anthony Ryder.
Party town, everybody's gotta get. I'm looking through some other bodies.